Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
And welcome to Following On County Cricketer. I'm John Norman from TalkSport alongside Nick Friend, George DeBell from The Cricketer magazine, and also Steve Harmison, two-time Ashes winner, two-time County Championship winner. And we are looking back at all the action from that, the County Championship, and ahead to the final round of fixtures for May, a month hiatus before the County Championship. That doesn't mean we've got plenty to talk about. The England squad named, but we are recording one day before it has been. So we're going to do a little bit of guesswork ahead of that, as well as casting our eye over the notable moments. And there were quite a few from the County Championship. You're listening on TalkSport 2 or on the Following On podcast. Thanks for joining us here on Following On County Cricketer. Let's get on with the show. First off, as mentioned in the intro, we are recording this before the England squad has been announced for that first Test match against New Zealand at Lord's. But we're going to give a couple of predictions about who we think is going to make the 17-man squad, I think it is. Either way, you can find out very shortly whether we guessed correctly or whether there was a complete unknown brought in. The other big news just announced is that Tom Harrison has stepped down from the ECB. George DeBell, where do we start? First things first, I suppose, how will we look back at his reign, essentially? What will be the highlights and what will be the lowlights from his period at the top of English cricket?
He reminds me a little bit of someone who maybe scored a century on debut, or a double century even on debut, and then the rest of their career was awful. In that, he brought in that broadcast deal, huge broadcast deal, pretty early in his tenure, which, you know, it was very, very valuable to the game in lots of positive ways. So, and there were other pluses, actually. You know, England did win the World Cup on his watch. You know, he has to take some credit for that, I think. And equally, actually, they got through COVID okay in lots of ways. You know, they didn't have the financial meltdown that could have happened and seems to have happened a bit more elsewhere. So he deserves some credit for that as well. At the same time, despite all the money that's come in, I'm not sure they've ever been in so much financial plight. I'm not sure there's ever been so much debt. They'd spent the money before COVID. There's obviously an inclusion and diversity crisis. That happened on his watch and isn't completely his fault, obviously, but I think the ECB had turned a blind eye to it for decades, really. And I think he probably leaves the game as divided as it's been in a long time. I mean, I didn't live through the sort of Packer years, but certainly this century, and maybe for a lot longer than that, I don't recall the game being quite as divided. And a lot of that, I think, is probably due to the 100. But with the 100 and the inclusion crisis together, I think you see a game that is at something of a crisis point. And he leaves it, you know, in a bit of a mess. There's no chair, there's no chief exec lined up. I generally think his heart's in the right place. He definitely meant well on the inclusion issue, but he proved unable to do a lot to help. And it does leave a bad taste in the mouth that, you know, the ECB made huge scale redundancies cut across the game. And he took a whopping bonus a few weeks ago. And, it, you know, he leaves, two or so months after he's had his bonus. That leaves a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. But, you know, people have different views. it's not a black and white picture. There were successes on his watch, but I hope that we've learned from it, really, and I hope that the way things are done in future is very, very different. Whoever comes in has a hell of a job. Whoever the chair and chief exec are, they have a really, really, really difficult job to try and unite the game.
Would it also be fair to say that the women's game has come on leaps and bounds under his tenureship? Should he not take some credit for that? And also, in regards to the 100, would you also agree it's probably too early to make judgment on the success of that tournament? And actually, in a weird way, his tenure will be really judged in maybe 5 to 10 years. Maybe it's obviously maybe a little bit too early to do so today.
Well, there's a lot in there, right? There's a lot in there. Is it too early to judge, you know, will it take 5 or 10 years? Possibly. Yeah, I mean, we always look back with hindsight and more wisdom and knowledge, so sure. Is it too early to judge the 100? It depends what you mean. As a cricket competition, it works. It's been very expensive and they haven't been very honest about the costs. Don't think it's too early to conclude that. And it's been very divisive. I don't think it's too early to conclude that. Whether it's been a tool to make more people fall in love with the game, I think is the you know, fair debate, because it certainly has up to a point. You know, some people who weren't watching cricket before are. Well, that's a big tick. And it was good for the women's game, which goes back to your earliest question. All the thing I'd argue about that is, you know, there was a Kia Super League before the 100. They did get rid of it. It was almost like, you know, sinking a ship so that they could say, here's the lifeboat. And the women's game has come on a bit under his tenure. That is definitely true. I think that the foundations for that were put in a little while before. Actually, you'd have to give Giles Clark some credit there. And has it progressed as quickly as it might have done? Don't know, debatable. So, you know, all these things you say, there are lots of shades of grey. And I don't have yes-no answers to any of it. But I would say that the progress that was made often came at the cost of progress elsewhere. And the thing that was most important with the 100 was that they were double headers. Well, that was actually a bit of an accident, wasn't it? But it was because of COVID. And it worked an absolute treat. So there are things we can learn from that, certainly. And while I have a lot of reservations, obviously, about the 100, I wouldn't dispute for a second that it was kind of good for the women's game, with the caveat I already gave, and that there were people in cricket grounds that we hadn't seen before. Again, I'd say that you just needed to put some cricket on free-to-air, really, and people fall in love with it because it's a great bloody game. So having not done that for years and years, I'm not sure they deserve huge amounts of credit for finally throwing us a scrap. But, you know, people have different views on that. And we're talking, you know, I've only known this news for half an hour. So I don't know whether I'm being fair or even if I'm sitting on the fence too much. I don't know. But those are some views off the top of my head.
How would you compare the county championship at the start of Tom Harrison's reign, Nick, compared to where it is now? And actually, do you think there's been, you know, do you think he's had much to do with its successes or failures or stagnation or otherwise?
In answer to the last bit, no. I think regarding the successes, I don't think, I'm trying to think of where Tom Harrison's been would have been particularly involved in any of the stuff that's sort of gone on within the actual domestic four-day stuff for the last, what is it, 8 years, I think, isn't it? I guess there's bits around the schedule that have meant different, but you know, different competitions we play at different times, and that he'll have impacted on. But I can't think Tom Harrison would have had much of a positive impact, let's say, on the way the county championship has worked in recent years. But then I don't know if that's not particularly being that's not necessarily being critical of him, because I don't know if that's under his remit. But I mean, sort of directly, would that not be more of a, I don't know, is that where Neil Snowball comes into it and the guys and the counter chairs and, you know, I guess the question I'd ask, throw it back at you rather, really, is how much, would say, the CEO is really, you know, giving directly into the championship, the Royal London Cup and those kind of things, especially when we know how big an impact he's had specifically on the 100. So that is, I appreciate, not much of an answer, but George says he's known this for half an hour. I've known this for about for about 12 minutes. So,
well, in essence, you could say that his input with the 100 has had a drastic effect on the county championship and the Royal London Cup.
Though the 100's a year old, so I wouldn't want to. did talk of the 100 beforehand to have an impact in the county championship. I don't think it's. I'm not sure that's fair to say. I mean, I think certainly Tom Harrison's tenure has seen a drastic sort of collapse in the Test team in recent years, hasn't it? But so I guess that all aligns. And obviously Tom Harrison took over in 2014, which was sort of the beginning of that. The beginning of that phase after the Andy Flower reign and you know that great team of 2011, that kind of thing, and obviously just after the fall of that side as well. So unquestionably, there's been an enormous downturn in results for the Test team since then. But then again, under Trevor Bayliss, England unbeaten at home.
I was going to say they went within a win of being number one in the world, didn't they? If Pakistan,
yeah,
beat them at the Oval, is that right? And Pakistan went to number one in the world instead.
Yeah.
I think that was a shootout for that position.
And he'd also say that it's worth bearing in mind, given all the stuff that's happened in the last year, that you know Chris Hillwood's first year as Test coach was not all bad either. So, you know, I'd be wary of taking this one win in 17 or 18, whatever it is, and saying, and you know, sort of casting that over a 7-year period, because actually they're not really bad at Red Bull cricket through all of it. And nor would I say, and I think nor would a lot of people who watch County Championship and a lot of County fans say that the County Championship has been a particularly bad product in that time. I think certainly the white ball focus that you know that brought a World Cup, the best team in the world, a team that's the envy of you know the rest of the cricketing world, a Women's World Cup as well, of course, worth saying, in 2017. Was that balance quite right? Probably not by the end, but you know, did it achieve a lot of what it set out to do in terms of the white ball stuff? I think that's pretty hard to argue with. So I think ultimately, I think people look back at the balance, won't they? So the balance, just purely looking at results and where these two teams sit now, and you've got a test team that is in this rut, and a white ball team that is in this, you know, that is stacked full of options and guys who can't get near it who would previously have been staples of it. You know, that something's obviously gone wrong somewhere, but the white ball focus had the results it was after. And but as George said earlier, sort of when talked about progress at the expense of progress, I guess that we go back to that, don't we? One rather came at the expense of the other.
Yeah, we've got to be careful not to blame the 100 for everything. Yeah. Much as I have a lot of reservations about the 100, the expression I use instead really is the white ball window. Because personally, I wouldn't have cared if they had made the T20 competition 100 balls. Could live with that. And I wouldn't really have, I would have had no fewer problems with it had it been a window for T20 cricket in the middle of the season. As soon as you have a window in the English season, you are prioritising one format over the other. And, you know, when you ask about the County Championship, I think that the very best I could say about Tom Harrison and the County Championship is that he was complacent. You know, I'm not having to go at county cricket at all. I think we're making it impossible for the counties to produce the players that England require at test level if you're playing in the margins of the season. But everyone knows all those arguments already, but a lot of those things happened on Tom's watch. I want to come back on the questions about the women's game as well. The lack of Red Bull cricket, I think, should be a concern. It's very difficult. There is definitely some progress towards more professionalism. You know, there are factually many, many more professional women's cricketers. And, you know, Claire Connor's always been very measured in her reasoning about this, in that you have to be realistic about the rate of progress and the amount that can be paid. Sometimes it feels a little bit derisory, though, doesn't it? That it does feel that, you know, that the levels of payment are just enough to say they're doing it without necessarily being 100% committed. I don't know, maybe that's harsh. But I say again, you know, when you're making 65 people redundant, when you're cutting budgets for everything, when you're paying very, very small rates, it really does leave a bad taste in the mouth to be taking a huge bonus and walking off into the sunset 2 months afterwards.
Harmy, I'm not sure if you've got anything to add to that before we get on with the show.
No. And pretty much covered the whole lot. Tom Harrison was brought in, I think, mainly to sort out the TV deal. That's his background. That was his expertise. He did that. And some will argue that he did it very, very well because of the state of the TV deal that they got. Did he have any interest? Well, he would have had interest, but did he have any expertise on the cricket side? Did he entrust people that he believed that could do the job and they haven't done the job? I don't think you'll fully know that, but for all the benefits, all the negatives that Tom Harrison's brought into the game from a financial point of view, and with George, his last point is the valid point, and that's the most important point, and that's the point that everybody will remember, making people redundant, you know, cutting costs and walking away with something substantial in your pocket. That for me just tarnishes anything that he did prior, positively.
Just one thing that might be of interest is that I believe that he's gone because he couldn't nail down the long-term broadcast deal he wanted. So there was talk of trying to agree a 10-year broadcast deal, and I think it's faltered and failed. And that was his skill, wasn't it? That was his one remaining really good thing, and that has gone. And I think it's actually good that it's gone, because you are making it desperately difficult for the new regime that comes in. If you've already decided what the next 10-year broadcast deal looks like. So I think I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's I think that's been a catalyst to his departure. And by the way, this isn't a surprise. I mean, it's a surprise this morning, but I think we've written several weeks ago that he was going to go in June specifically. So and it's around the time of the AGM. This isn't really a surprise. He was always going to go about now, and we've probably known that for 6 months.
Right. Okay. That's not the top line. It's not a moment of the week. The race to the Lords, Tom Harrison leaving do, might be featured later on. But let's get on with the show with the top line.
The top line.
Well, guys, runs, and more runs. There was just a couple of results. The weather intervened, but some big first inning scores, notably at Beckenham, as predicted by yourself, Nick. Top lines. Let's start with you, Nick. Top line from the latest round of County Championship.
I wanted to say, I don't want to go as far as just saying Robson for England and sort of wave the flag and start the campaign, but I did want to say that that I've not seen a better opening batter this season, I don't think. But I've not, I mean, in terms of games I've been at, I wasn't at Hove to watch him get a ton and chase a 370, but I was at Lords on a pretty miserable overcast day when it was hooping around corners on a pretty lively pitch against Broad, Pattinson, Fletcher, who'd not enforced the follow-on, who had a day and a half to bowl Middlesex out. Granted, the rain intervened at the end and killed it, but Middlesex was 0 for 2, then 100 for, then 130 for 3 when he brought up his 100, and that's not because he was, you know, throwing his bat at everything. He is just a very organised 32-year-old opening batter who played for England 8 years ago, knows his game far better now than he did then. I don't think he was a bad player then, for what it's worth. I mean, if he averaged 30.5 through 7 tests, I mean, if he did that now, they'd have you stuffed, let alone... You know, rather than dropped after 7 efforts. But he's got an international 100. And he's gone away. And to be honest, he's never averaged 70, which is often what you need to do to get into an England team. You just sort of have one big year and they jump on you. But he's just been pretty consistent on the hardest decks in the country year on year. He averaged 40 last year. So it was the third top run scorer in the country playing at Lords, which is, if you speak to some of his teammates, you know, quite an achievement in itself. I'm astonished that he wasn't in Australia. Well, he was in Australia, but he was playing grade cricket in Australia. He's Australian. He grew up in New South Wales. He knows the pitches. He knows how to open the batting. He'd come off the back of a very good year. And yet England let him play for Eastern Suburbs while they had a bunch of youngsters in the Lions and, you know, guys sort of being drafted in after 2-3 tests of the Ashes series, trying to find their feet, when actually the answer may well have been hiding in plain sight. I don't know why England are so scared to go back to guys who've gone back into the county game and, you know, maybe worked out what didn't go, you know, right the first time. You know, we've had this chat before, and we've multiple guys, and whether it's, yeah, I think it was Dom Sibley last week, wasn't it? I really don't think it's rocket science with Robson. I just think he's a far more rounded player now than he was then, and he wasn't bad then. And, you know, if there are scouts looking around, if you can do it against Broad and Pattinson on a, you know, on a pretty lively track when you're miles behind in the game, that should put you right at the forefront of people's minds. And if it doesn't, I'd be slightly disappointed, I think.
Okay, that's the opening partner to Alex Lee sorted. Thanks to Nick.
May I jump in and say, I'm going to completely contradict myself and say I think Alex Lee should start because he did fine in the Caribbean, and I think three games is never a go, and you're never going to get anywhere if that constitutes a go. And I would also completely understand if they picked Dom Sibley or even Rory Burns, who's, you know, I think a lot of people predicted would end this stretch of games as, you know, looking like one of the best openers in the country. And I think he probably has done that. So I don't think it's a hard and fast case. It's probably quite nice that there is that there are genuine options of guys who are scoring runs. And then, you know, I'm sure Crawley will be in, Zach Crawley will be in thoughts as well because he got a ton in the Caribbean, and but he's not scored the runs that he I think needed to, given the runs that everyone else has scored in this last month. So that's not to say Robson must open, but I do think it. I almost think it, I just think it's quite weird that he's not played for 8 years, to be honest. And I would like him to be given a chance this summer because he's a pretty. I think he's a bloody good player.
Harmy, what about the bowlers? I imagine your top line might involve a player that was and has been your one to watch throughout the summer.
Yeah, Nick's going, I'm at Gloughton, Nick's going, Robson for England. I'm saying Potts for England, but I'll probably come to that when you go to the one to watch at the end. So I'm going to pick a left field top line. He is a bowler. I'm going to say my favourite county cricketer top line. What a week he had, Luke Fletcher. Opening the bat and got 50. Bat number 11 got 50. He's got wickets for fun. I look at Luke
Harley,
Fletcher.
Harley, you should have seen his run out.
Yeah, I can imagine,
It was very Flintoff Ponting oval 09 vibes.
Yeah.
Sort of stumbling around the ball at mid on, throwing the stumps down, then having to be chased by his teammates.
I think he's a brilliant character. Somebody who's obviously never going to get mentioned sort of for England honours. Sorry, Luke, but if I'm a selector, don't think I'm picking you for England. But I think from a dressing room point of view, he must be a joy to play with. He must get up in the morning. He gets up in the morning because I've heard him say this. He gets up in the morning. He's thankful for what he's got when he plays cricket for Nottinghamshire. He opens a bowling, opens a batting, batting number 11, and he contributes for his team. So as much as I want to say, I think the top line on a serious note is Potts and Parkinson. We produce flat wickets. We got to commend the groundsman. Flat wickets, runs for fun for the first 4 or 5 rounds of county championships. But a good bowler, somebody with something different, will always take wickets on good wickets. That was Potts, and that's Parkinson, and that's why hopefully we'll get a call-up.
Brilliant stuff. OK, what about you, George? Your top line from the week's action.
I can't remember what I wrote to you, if I'm honest, when you asked me before. but I'll tell you, it does seem to me that England have a bit of a choice, although less so, because they're almost having to pick everyone with a pulse and bladder control at this stage. But they almost have a choice between the old and the new. There's a lot of talk about, you know, you've got to stick with people. Well, so far, the selections, if that's what you call them, of the director and coaches, have been very bold. You know, we've got a coach who's never coached Red Bull cricket, a captain who's captained one game before, a director of cricket who's never been a director of cricket. I mean, you know, anything could happen. I thought a lot of what I've just heard was really, really interesting. I agree about Luke Fletcher. It's a really nice story from a guy who's had to work really hard. He's a skillful cricketer. Gives it his all. A lot of fun to watch. Don't see him as a realistic England contender. But Alex Lees is an interesting one. I think he averaged 21 in the Caribbean. Quite a lot less than Crawley. I think he had a top score of 31, 33, something like that. They were the flattest wickets I've ever seen. It won't get any easier. So I wouldn't stick with him. To be honest, I would pick Sibley and Robson, and I'd move Crawley to 3. Crawley got a 100, what, 2 tests ago? If you're talking about sticking with people, I don't know. I don't suppose the key Crawley relationship, which is obviously sort of quite paternal, is particularly relevant. I'm sure Rob will be strong on that score. Don't think there'll be an issue. But I would stick with him because I think his ceiling is very high. Anderson getting root, I mean, that's obviously a huge moment. I was lucky enough to speak to Jimmy Anderson yesterday. And, you know, he was reveling it. He said he didn't say anything because, you know, he didn't really need to. There were 2 stumps on the floor. But he did also admit that he had watched the ball back on quite a few occasions. And why wouldn't you? It's an absolute beauty. You know, it's beaten one of the best batters in the world through the gate. It's absolutely fantastic. So that was a big moment. But I do think they've got some decisions to make. I don't know. I don't want to say the same old, but do they stick with Broad or say, and Craig Overton, who absolutely, you know, Craig Overton has probably earned his place if he's fit. Or do they go a bit bolder and look at Jamie Overton and Parkinson? And I think Potts is almost a dead cert to be in the squad at this stage. He's got almost twice as many wickets as anyone else. I think we've got to be realistic about what you expect from him, but he's absolutely deserved it. I would be inclined to go for Jamie Overton. He's a funny cricketer in a way. You could put a highlights package of Jamie Overton together and he looks like a world beater. The problem with highlights packages, they don't show the crap, do they? And he's never going to be a guy who bowls you 10 overs for 10 runs. That's not his skill. But I believe he's been timed at 90 this season. He does swing the ball and he can bat. I know you're picking him as a bowler, but he can bat. So while an early June pitch at Lord's may not be absolutely ideal for Jamie Overton, if you were looking to the future at all, and I always think it's a balance, I would at least have him in the squad with a view to looking at what's happening in, you know, Karachi or whatever down the track. Because if you go to Karachi with Broad and Anderson and Craig Overton, you know, you're going to be in the field a long time. So we might have to look at a few new things. And the other thing is, I think they're going to stick with Leach ahead of Parkinson. I don't really see that Parkinson could have done any more. And I think you can squeeze him in, particularly if you've got Jamie Overton at 8, because he can bat. What do you think, Harmy? Do I hear you disagreeing with me?
No, I'm not disagreeing. I was going to jump in at your first point with the McCullum left field, key not done director, one test from Stokes. In this great, exciting, dynamic, all this, these sort of positive words about, you know, the England coaching setup that they've come out of nowhere. And then I'm thinking, yeah, that's great, but we're going to pick 478 mile an hour bowlers. You can't have a dynamic, exciting, free-flowing team with 478 mile an hour bowlers. So England needs something different. And if Leach is going to play, which by all accounts he is, then you have to pick somebody fast, somebody that's all over the shop, somebody like what I was when I first went into the group, because you're going to need something. I think Potts has got a better radar, but possibly not as quick as Jamie. Jamie's all over the shop and bowled 90 mile an hour, and he's fit enough to bowl 90 mile an hour for a day and a half. Then I pick him, because the simple fact is I need something different. I go with Broad over Robinson every day of the week, because as much as that's not looking forward, one's got unbelievable standards and the other one's standards are about as low as a snake's belly at this minute in time, and doesn't look as though he's anywhere near in shape form to play test match cricket. So I think there is a fine balance between what the balance of the squad and the side will make up. But I think we need somebody fast if we're going to play Jack Leach. And when you look at what there is around, we've got a hell of a lot. I want to question the sort of, not so much the medical team, but what is going on with our fast bowlers? Zaki Mahmood's gone down again. We've got Ollie Stone, Mark Wood, Jofra Archer, Matt Fisher.
Norwell as well. I mean, Norwell. It's not just the first string, Norwell it's the well. Second string and third string. But they're all injured.
These are the ones when you got to Karachi we're going to need, and these are the ones, them five, near six names I've just mentioned. They're the ones, if Brendan McCullum comes in, we're going to play this sort of, you know, we're going to play some positive cricket. Ben Stokes saying the same, Rob Key saying the same. They're the ones I'm going, yeah, right, perfect. We'll build our team around this lot as opposed to having to go with 478 mile an hour bowlers.
So what are they doing now, do you think, Harmy, that is leading to these stress fractures and back problems that they weren't doing 10, 15, 20 years ago? Or is it just one of those things that happens?
You don't want my opinion on this because everybody just says I'm an idiot when I see it. They don't bowl enough. You don't bowl enough. It's as simple as that. The one thing that gets you fit and strong and, you know, consistent from an action point of view is by bowling. But being in the red zone, oh, no, he can't bowl. He can't bowl today. He can only bowl 10 balls. He can only bowl 20 balls. Being in the red zone for such a long period of time, I'm not going to swear. It's nonsense. You've got to bowl. The only way you can get fit for bowling is by bowling. The minute you stop bowling or the minute you have time off, everything else in your body becomes suspect to an injury, because bowling fast is such a unique thing. Who on earth told a kid at 15-year-old, you've got to run as fast as you can, throw yourself up in the air and land as hard as you can on the ground, and then do that for 16, 20 overs a day for the next 3 days? You're talking about health and safety. It's madness. But the only way you can get fit and strong for it is by doing it. And unfortunately, we've got too many idiots who have been these PhDs in sports science and all that stuff, and they go, oh, no, you're bowling too much today. You're bowling too much today. What happens? Anybody above 80 mile an hour, because it's a hard thing to do, gets injured. Madness.
So can
absolute
I give you
madness.
An amazing stat. An amazing stat. I mean, so Harmy is a very interesting example. He is the only England specialist bowler. I just want to find this. I've just written a piece about it, but it hasn't been published just yet. He is the only specialist England fast bowler to have played 25 tests who's born in birth quarter one. So your birthday is fairly early in the academic year. Is that right, Harmy?
Yeah, October.
Okay. In the last 20 years, yeah, Steve Harmison is the only bowler to be born in birth quarter one to play 25 tests or more. Now, why would that be? Well, I would argue that it's probably because nearly every bowler who gets into the... It's an advantage, obviously, to be strong physically at that age. You get into the team, you get more coaching. Actually, it turns out to be a disadvantage because everyone who gets into the team and gets specialist coaching is broken by the time they become a professional. So only by avoiding the pathway system could you become a good fast bowler in England. I kid you not. That is a stunning stat.
Who didn't play a great deal of sort of representative junior cricket?
Did you not?
I didn't. I went from Durham's in the 17s, just playing two second team games for Durham and then into Durham's first class side.
Okay, so I've got a paragraph in this piece. It may be that avoiding exposure to the pathway system provides bowlers with the best chance of progressing. What are we doing?
But also it comes down to, George, it comes down to, and ECB used to go ballistic. And I mean, they used to send messages to Durham all the time. And I must admit, at times, I was looking over to my captain, who was 5'5", moustache, Australian, who didn't really care about anything England. And I'd be into my ninth over as an 18-year-old, fast bowler, going, is he awake there? I'm Booney, waving at him. Booney, I'm still bowling. Booney, I'm still bowling. And I tell you what, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I'd bowl 10 overs off the reel, 11 overs, and he'd just keep me going. All he did was he learnt me how to bowl fast. Learnt me how to bowl overs and consistently bowl overs. At the start of the season, he took me blue kit offers at the Folkestone Court as an 18-year-old, and he said, you will not need that. He says, I'll play somebody out of the league if we've not got not enough players. But you'll play 16 first-class matches, and that's all you'll play. And that was right at the very start of the season. He did that to me for nearly 2 years. And there was times where I'm like, Booney, I'm still bowling here. Yeah, carry on. And honestly, the ECB would go mental. That was under 19. They would go mental. And I still think, I steer this to this day, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I learned how to bowl overs.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, because we have whole departments at the ECB dedicated to forward planning and all these things, and yet they're still reliant on a guy who's about to be 40 for their fast bowling. It is, honestly, it's cataclysmic. You can't tell me that this is competent. Yeah.
Our two best bowlers know how to bowl and know their bodies and know what they're going to do. And everybody questioned at the start, well, we've got seven championship games they're going to play. Brodie came out. I'm not playing seven championship games. I know how many overs I need to get to the first test and I'll be ready. And I'll go back into it. Keep going. Next.
Okay. Look, I'm throwing out the template. We've done like 35 minutes, just one section.
That was a great don't get me started after 10 minutes on the subject.
That is Harmy to a T. Okay, well, look, it is a bit of a weird show because the squad has been announced, or will have been announced by the time you watch or listen to this. We don't know what the squad is, but let's just have a little look at the runners and riders. That conversation we've just had should be in the next section, but forget about it. Let's go to the race to Lords.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage
for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Race to Lourdes.
Okay. Last week I dropped Adam Lythe and Mr. Bracey, and that was a good decision because neither of them scored any runs. Let's rattle through this because, of course, this is slightly less relevant for the show because the squad has already been announced. And as I say, we don't know about it. There was some scores of note, though. Joe Root, yes, did lose off and middle, but not. Let's not forget he did hit a maximum 147 in the first innings against Jimmy Anderson. So I think that's honours even, if truth be told. Ben Stokes weighed in with 82. Ollie Pope, Ben Foulkes and Sam Curran all scores for Surrey. Rory Burns didn't, though. That brilliant second inning century from Sam Robson, saving the match for Middlesex against Nottinghamshire. Let's have a look at Yorkshire. Harry Brook, we're expecting him to be in the 17. 41 and 82 not out. David Milan, two scores of 23. Will he be in there? Alex Lease, I expect, will be in there. 44 and 61. I mean, look, if we are using the county championship, Lease should be in there, and so should Ben Foulkes. But I wonder whether it'll be Bairstow who gets the gloves. We'll talk about that in a second. But Hannon didn't score any. He got two. Parkinson, 4 for 19, 2 for 53. Could be in the squad, but we are expecting Jack Leach, who weighed in with some wickets this week as well. 5 for 49 and 3 for 41 against Gloucestershire. Craig Overton, 0 for 57 and 2 for 28 against the same opponents. Anderson, we mentioned, 1 for 83 and 2 for 17 against Yorkshire. Stuart Broad, 3 for 39, 0 for 24 against Middlesex. Zach Crawley, 17 and 35 against Surrey. George DeBell, who do you think will take the gloves for England?
Ben Foulkes. There are several reasons for that. I mean, you're sort of asking me what I'd do and sort of asking me what I think, but I think it's the same answer. I think that the guys who have been to the IPL need some time off for their own good. Just, you know, just to allow them to refresh. They've been allowed to go, so there's no criticism implied there. It's absolutely not unreasonable to be suggesting that Johnny Bairstow comes back. He's looked good on at the IPL. It looks like he's lost a bit of weight, doesn't he? He looks fit. You know, he's obviously a terrific batter. Seven is his place. I mean, he's a monster at seven. His keeping, by the time they gave up on him, had become, you know, really fine. He'd worked really, really hard. Foulkes is a better keeper, though, and I think Foulkes is a good batter. So I would stick with Foulkes. I think he's going to make a difference in some games. And I certainly wouldn't go back to Joss Butler. He's playing, again, he's playing like a god, isn't he, in Whitepool cricket at the moment. I would allow him to do that, to be free, to be magnificent in that, and not try and make him something that I just don't think he is, which is, I don't think he is a Red Bull cricketer. We've tried that. Lord, they've really, really tried. So move on from that. And specialisation is no bad thing. You know, equally, you could say Liam Livingstone, if he wanted to play Test cricket, he'd walk in, wouldn't he? I mean, he looks fantastic. Be able to bowl offies and leggies as well. That would be valuable. But maybe we'll never find out. But anyway, to answer the question, I think it will be Foulkes, and I think it should be Foulkes.
Harmy, your thoughts on the same question? And if it is Foulkes at seven, if it's Foulkes at seven, does Bairstow play at five, or does Bairstow get dropped again?
I find it very, very hard to drop Johnny Bairstow. I've got to find a place in the side. Bearing in mind the last 200s that England have scored, I think, well...
Rested, Harmy, rested.
Yeah, I could take that, but I think they're just kicking a can down the road and then you're giving, not false hope, but message that you're sending. I'll come one a little bit left field. I'd really have a serious consideration of sitting Ollie Pope down and saying, well... I mean, Harry Brook is getting in the side at 5. Root at 4, Stokes at 6. Where, you know, you're not sort of fitting into that because he's played better than you so far. I want you in my side. Have you thought about maybe playing as a wicketkeeper batsman and turning yourself into a wicketkeeper batsman? Because he can do the, he can keep, and we'll put up with, you know, your development as a keeper to get you in the side at number 7. The Ben Foulkes one for me, as much as I do like Ben Foulkes as a keeper, has he got enough runs? Can he get me enough runs? Because I have got 4 number 10s coming in from 8 down. I shouldn't be thinking that and picking aside that. But if Ben Foulkes bats at 7 with a Leach, Potts, Broad, Anderson bowling unit, if I'm New Zealand, I'm thinking we get Ben Stokes and we can roll these over in no time at all. And I think you've got to look at the balance of the side and that. So that for me, Johnny Bairstow plays at number 7. Because I think as much as he might need a rest, I actually need to win or not lose cricket matches at the start of the season, the new tenureship. And I think we need our number 7 that's to score hundreds, and that would be Bairstow.
Nick, if you look at that that team that played against West Indies in Grenada, I had to look it up because I couldn't even remember who was in it. But essentially, I'll tell you who it was. Crawley and Leese, Root at 3, Lawrence at 4, Stokes, Bairstow, Foulkes, Wokes, Overton, Leach and Mahmood. Now, it could be that Zach Crawley's batted himself out of the team. Dan Lawrence, injury, he's out of the team. Bairstow, we're not sure. He might be out of the team or he might take Foulkes' position. Wokes is injured, he won't play. Mahmood's injured, he won't play. Leach will play. Overton probably won't play.
One of them will play. And Overton will play.
Overton will play. But essentially, you're not going to be playing Overton, Broad and Anderson, are you? But is there a danger here that we're going to bypass the county championship again? Or do you think that it is actually going to play a part in what the selectors are thinking?
Well, I mean, it's certainly going to play a part because if the side you've read out there, I mean, only 4 of them are likely to play, really, aren't they? So, And then you've got Johnny. I think I agree with George and Johnny. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with them saying just take a couple of weeks off. But I think that's also partly on the player. But as Harmony said, I would want Johnny Bairstow playing and keeping if he's around in the country, fit, available, etc. I don't think they will bypass it because I think, as fate has had it, I think most of the players who expected to do well in the county championship with a view to playing for England have done well. You know, whether that was Dom Sibley after his winter away, whether that was Ollie Pope and the runs he scored, whether it's Harry Brook. I mean, I think Brook's been touted for a summer like this for years, despite his sort of still fairly mediocre first-class record. And people have said for years that he's a very talented player. He was in that 19 squad in 2018, I think it was, down in New Zealand. You know, he's been on the pathway. People have said he can play. So I don't necessarily think... I honestly think the only player who may well come into selection, let's exclude Bairstow here, the guys who've been in the IPL, the only guys who've been playing the championship who I think may well come into selection for this team who's not put up the numbers in the first month of the season is Crawley. And, you know, there's a fascination with Crawley, I guess, that goes back to the double ton and obviously the 100 more recently. As George said, they've seen his ceiling, and I understand the fascination with his ceiling. You know, he's not many guys have got, you know, forget that it was his first double ton for England or his first ton for England. Not many blokes have got double tons for England anyway. You know, he got double ton for England, it's a very good attack, albeit on a very good wicket, albeit behind closed doors. So, but there's obviously a high ceiling in there and they like that. So I genuinely would understand if he played. I don't think it's not what I would do. I think there are better, more than anything for his own sake. I think English cricket can help its batters so much if they pick guys who are in form. You know, the number of times we pick guys for the winter on the back of a summer when they've not played a game for 3 months in the intervening time and then get surprised when they can't knock off another ton. Like, it's, you know, if you're not going to pick Harry Brook now or Sam Robson now or probably those two particularly, or even Milan, you know, if you're not going to pick those three guys now, you know, when are you going to pick them? You know, when are you going to pick them that would stand them in better steads, you know, in international cricket? You don't want to come into an international cricket against Trent Bolt and Tim Southee not knowing where your off stump is. And that is sort of where Crawley is at the moment. You want to come in, especially with this new era, with England on a terrible run, you want to come in knowing that your game's in a good place. It almost wouldn't be fair on Crawley, you know, to knowing the scrutiny if he doesn't get runs immediately. He plays in a team at Kent where Ben Compton scored a million runs. Daniel Bedram's got a couple of hundreds. You know, he's not even the top batter at his county at the moment. And Kent, bloody hell, Kent have played on some flat ones this season. I think there have been 20-plus hundreds in their games. So, to answer your question, I'm not massively concerned by it, because I do think most of the guys who are going to come into contention one way or another are guys who have performed in the first weeks of the season. I think Crawley is likely the only one, I'd say, other than Bairstow, who has played and has not looked like someone who probably should be in contention based on their domestic performances. But they're going to, you know, you read that team out there. You know, there are going to be changes one way or another, because more than anything else, frankly, they don't have the bodies otherwise. Like they, and I think it is something to be excited by. You know, it's a new era. You know, we won't know until June 2nd whether it's going to be, you know, how that team shapes up. But it's quite exciting to have a on the back of one win in 18 to have a completely fresh start, isn't it? So yeah, I don't have a massive problem with that. To answer the question, I think Crawley's probably the only one who fits into that category.
Another Red Bull reset. Guys, time is against us, and then, unless anyone's got another very quick point to make, we can move on to the mailbag.
The mailbag.
Okay, well, look, we had loads of questions in this week. I've got a question here, well, for all three of you, actually. I'll start with you, Harmy. Sanoj at British Blackman says, when assessing players at England duty, is the difference between Division 1 cricket and Division 2 cricket taken into consideration enough? Bearing in mind, of course, we have spoken about the much vaunted bowling attack that Nottinghamshire possess, coming up against a man that I still can't quite work out whether Nick wants him in the team or doesn't. Sam Robson
I do.
At Middlesex.
But I understand if he wasn't.
We're going to talk about how this works, Nick. You've got to be strident in your opinion. It's black-white. There's no in-between. No grey.
No nuance allowed.
Exactly. No nuance allowed. That's our new podcast. So, and also, of course, we've also talked about Matty Potts. Harmy, I'll ask you the question. Do you think it is taken into consideration what division the players are playing in?
Yeah, I think there'll be some consideration of, it's not so much Division 1, Division 2, it's who these players getting the runs against. You know, Joe Root's just got 147 against Jimmy Anderson. Yeah, that's class, going against class. Then Jimmy Anderson gets him out. So you look at that and you think, our two greatest assets of the last sort of 10 years are actually in good form. So there, doesn't matter whether that was first or second division, it's individuals. Ben Stokes bowled in a bowling attack with Brydon Carr, who will play for England by the end of the summer, if not definitely in Pakistan, comes back for the first time. He's bowling along with Matty Potts, Chris Rushworth at Marnus Labuschagne, second best bowler in the world at this minute in time. So they're all in the second division, along with the ridiculous bowling attack of Freedy at Middlesex and Broaden and Pattinson at Notts. So when I see that, you think, well, yeah, it's more who they're scoring the runs against rather than, what division they're in. So there'll be a little consideration. Also, grounds that they're scoring them at, the sort of whole vibe and environment that you're making the runs in and the time you've got the runs in and how you've constructed your innings. Now you can see it on YouTube, you know, through the live streaming. Everybody can see what's going on. So from selecting a team, I don't think you'd be picking anybody thinking, I'm taking a punt here, because you can see it, you can understand, you can feel the way that from a selection point of view. So I don't think the first or second division's got a huge amount of to deal with it. It's more who's going against who and how they're going about doing their jobs and building the innings and scoring the centuries that they're scoring.
I think that's been helped this year as well, because the lack of, you know, in inverted commas, result pitches, it's taken that one bit out of the equation, isn't it? So you've not necessarily had to look at the bowlers so much and say, you know, for example, Matty Potts has taken all his wickets at a time when Chris Rushworth hasn't taken many. And actually, normally, you know, at this point in the summer, Rushworth would have the figure that Potts has got. And you can almost just look at Potts' figures and go, blimey, look at the guys who aren't taking wickets for Durham. He must be doing something right. In the same way that, yeah, I mean, just joked about nuance, and that's, I think Harmy's completely right. Like, it's not about Div 1, it's Div 2, or Div 2. It's almost just looking internally within those games, isn't it? You know, whether it's the Robson 100, whether it's, you know, Somerset played a very depleted Gloucestershire team, for example, that ended up without its captain as well last week, because Graham Van Buren went off with a shoulder and drew them missing about nine players. So you know, then you could look at Warwick v Northants, where everyone scored 100. So it's not so much, you know, those last two are Div 1 games. So you'd say you've probably got a better bearing on, you know, who's playing well, who's closer to England through watching Middlesex v Notts than you did watching, you know, a pretty ragtag Gloucester side with three emergency low knees, missing Chris Dent, Nassim Shah, Mohamed Amir, Graham Van Buren for half the game, Ben Charlesworth, who started the season, David Payne, like, you know, they're missing their spine. So if you, without knocking Jack Leach's figures or anything, you bowled very well. I mean, and likewise, without knocking Sam Haynes' double 100 and stuff like that, there is so much more nuance now, I think, than just saying Div 1 or Div 2. And I think that is a pretty healthy spot to be in.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, time is against us. We will get more of your questions in the mailbag next week. But now it's time for One to Watch.
One to Watch.
Okay, One to Watch. Let's have a quick look. My player didn't play again. And Steve Harmison is essentially his players going to play for England. So there you go. There's a huge difference between my knowledge and his. Ed Pollock, he seems to get nice starts and it hasn't really kicked on too much. And that's been the case again this week.
Yeah, but I don't really... Maybe I misconstrued this segment at the start of the season. I don't mind that. I wasn't saying Ed Pollock for England.
No, I know
you weren't. I was just quite intrigued. He'd never played a Red Bull game before. Never played a first-class Red Bull game for a county at least. I've just quite enjoyed seeing the way he's gone. You know, he made 23 off 18 in the first innings against it was against Durham, wasn't it? No, was it against Durham? It wasn't against Durham, it was against Derbyshire. I've just quite enjoyed the fact that he's stayed true to his guns and he's not tried to be anything he's not been in the past. Obviously, he's sort of reined it in slightly. He's not trying to slog sweep the first over the leg side. But, you know, he's still, if it's there to hit, he's hitting it and it worked. It's worked with 100 and it's not worked in a couple of other games. And I'm still just quite intrigued watching it and quite looking forward to actually asking about it at some point as well, because he's very much learned on the fly.
Mason Crane did not play against Leicestershire. Matt Potts, well, we've already spoken about him, haven't we, Harmy? So let's finish the show with a look at the games that are going to be taking place. This is the last round of games before a little bit of a break. T20 cricket will be taking over. Yorkshire against Warwickshire in Div 1. Somerset against Hampshire. Somerset have turned things around a little bit, haven't they? Northants against Kent. Lancashire versus Essex. Harmy, what's your match there? Yeah, maybe even it is Somerset versus Hampshire.
Yeah, I think the Yorkshire-Warwickshire game will be I think that'll be a good game, especially when we find out who's actually in the squads. If Sibley gets in or doesn't get in, the bowling attack that Yorkshire have got will be another good test if Sibley goes and gets runs against a very, very good Yorkshire attack at Henley. Then he's given the selectors another nudge to say, you should have picked me, or I'm in good touch, you know, and getting runs against a good attack. But that for me is the game of next week.
And Division 2, George, Middlesex, Durham, Notts against Derbyshire, so Derbyshire derby, and Worcestershire versus Leicestershire. Notts derby, the one that stands out from those three?
Yeah, potentially. Because actually, although the squad's going to have been picked, you know, there'll still be some stuff to play for, won't there? You know, you would think that Stuart Broad, for example, will be in the larger squad. But I don't know that he's assured of a place right now. So people like him and maybe Ollie Robinson plays in the tour game as well against New Zealand. Maybe they're competing for one spot. Funnily enough, going back to something you said just now, you know, the context is always important. I think Broad took 3 wickets in that last game at Lords, but I think they were all tail-enders, were they? Nine tail-enders or something. Yeah, so I mean, that's not to have a go at him. He'll know his body better than anyone. But, you know, he will need to maybe feel he has another performance in him. So there's loads of stuff to enjoy and watch. And I'll be up at Leeds watching the Yorkshire-Warwickshire game. Yeah, really looking forward to it as ever.
Brilliant stuff. Well, look, thanks for your time as always. We will be back this time next week for Following On County Cricketer, looking back at the last round of championship games, actually. And what a couple of months it's been. Pleased to say we will be continuing. The focus will switch to T20 and 50-over stuff before the county championship comes up for another couple of games at the end of June. We'll know who's won the race to Lords this time next week, so we'll be reflecting on that and casting our eye over the other big stories. There's been one big story a week.
Just can I jump in, Norway? Just two things. Firstly, to wish you a happy birthday.
nearly.
The old fella. And two, just to say good thoughts from all of us, really, to Graham Thorpe and his family. Obviously, an awful time. Very nice, sweet-natured man. Everyone wishes him well. And we're thinking of him. Just, you know, I don't know how much is appropriate to talk about, but definitely we all wish him well.
Well, one of my absolute favourites growing up, and a man that I was, you know, really fortunate enough to work with on occasion. Back in 2008, actually, we shared a brilliant cab journey home from the Aegeus Bowl back to his house in Wimbledon. And Thorpey just didn't, he just talked the entire way. And I came out of the car and I was just, my head was in the clouds. So big love to him and his family. And also Andrew Simons, of course, who passed away this week in tragic circumstances. And a guy that, again, I've got amazing, we've all got amazing memories of. And of course, played for four counties as well. So yeah, sad times for cricket, unfortunately, continuing. But well said, George. Thanks for the birthday message. And yeah, we'll be back next week. Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.